This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on significance of Prime Minister's visit to Laos and India's Act East policy. The participants are Anil Wadhwa, former ambassador, and Atul Aneja, strategic analyst. The moderator is Simran Sodhi, journalist.
So today, before we start the discussion on the Prime Minister's visit to attend the India-ASEAN Summit and the East Asia Summit, let us get a sense of what these two summits mean and how different they are from one another. Ambassador Wadhwa, if you can just explain briefly as to what is the difference between the ASEAN and the East Asia Summit, when do these summits happen, and what is the driving force or the agenda when we hold these summits?
I think what happens in these summits is that the ASEAN-India Summit is normally held on the sideline of the East Asia Summit. East Asia Summit is a congregation of about 18 countries. It consists of the ASEAN countries plus the partners, and currently it's at 18, that number. We also have, of course, other formats like the ADMM Plus, where the defense ministers meet, and we now have another meeting which talks of only in terms of maritime security, etc. But the most important ones are the ASEAN Summit and ASEAN-India Summit. And similarly, there are ASEAN-Australia Summit, the Australia-New Zealand Summit, and so on and so forth, because ASEAN meets in partnerships. They will meet with China, they will meet with South Korea, etc. Now, what happens at the ASEAN-India Summit is that there is an assessment made about where the program of work is going, because normally it's determined between ASEAN and India at the beginning of a cycle of a few years. And in between, there is a chance to assess that. There is also a chance to make some announcements or take some initiatives as far as the partner countries are concerned with ASEAN. Normally, it is the ASEAN Secretariat which puts forward proposals, and they are acted upon by the partner countries. And at the East Asia Summit, it's more of a statement of positions on issues which are facing these countries, which they're bothered about, which the region faces in terms of economics, in terms of geopolitics, in terms of strategy, and any threats to peace and security. So it's an all-encompassing kind of a forum where countries have a chance to articulate what they feel about certain issues in a clear manner. Also, there's a chance for consultations on some resolutions which are adopted normally by consensus. There's hardly a vote in the summit. And as far as possible, the common language emerges. If it cannot emerge, then of course the resolution gets dropped. That is my experience. Also, there's no joint statement in the East Asia Summit. Normally, the chairman issues a statement, which is a position which is taken by various countries, all rolled into one statement by the chairman, which he feels is the bottom line, which will be acceptable to all the countries. And therefore, that is the chair statement, which then goes through and it acts as a reference for the future summits. Now, when ASEAN plus India summit takes place, India has made a number of proposals in the past. It has made some announcements, financial announcements, taken some initiatives like the Indo-Pacific Oceans Initiatives was announced both in the ASEAN-India summit as well as the East Asia summit, and now has been adapted by the East Asia summit for implementation.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi's participation in the 21st ASEAN-India summit marks a decade of India's Act East policy. And the Prime Minister joined ASEAN leaders to review the progress of ASEAN-India Comprehensive Strategic Partnership and also chart the future direction of cooperation. Ambassador Wadhwa, when you see the participation of the Prime Minister at ASEAN and the East Asia Summit, and we also have this backdrop of conflicts globally going on, how do you, one, see the India-ASEAN Summit, and how do you see India's participation in it?
I think as far as India's participation is concerned, Prime Minister Modi has made it a point to attend the summits since he came to power in his first term in 2014. And since then, he's only missed two of them. And that was also because of COVID in between. But otherwise, his focus has been on attendance as much as possible. He was also looking forward to participation at the current ongoing summits. In fact, for him, the centrality of ASEAN is important, but also he wants to connect India with ASEAN as much as possible so that it can benefit our Northeast states and also provide connectivity which can aid in future investments and trade growth between the two regions. For this to happen, I think he has a clear strategy. He wants to diversify this engagement in as many areas as possible. And therefore, he has also engaged the leadership in this regard. In fact, he had a summit meeting with the leadership in New Delhi, at which the relationship was raised to that of a strategic partnership.
In a special briefing on the visit, Secretary East in the Ministry of External Affairs, Jaideep Mazumdar, talked about India's commitment to both ASEAN and the East Asia Summit.
21st ASEAN-India Summit and the 19th East Asia Summit. These are especially significant this year because we mark the 10th year of Prime Minister's Act East policy this year. This is the 11th time that he is attending these events and shows India's great focus as well as our commitment to both ASEAN and the East Asia process.
Mr. Aneja, when we look at the Prime Minister's participation at the 21st ASEAN-India Summit, he also referred to the ASEAN nations as neighbors and partners in the Global South. Prime Minister Modi called 21st century as the century of India and ASEAN nations, adding that the India-ASEAN friendship was important at a time when parts of the world are facing conflicts and tensions. Mr. Aneja, how do you look at this statement that the 21st century is the century of India and ASEAN nations?
First of all, you know, if you look at this statement in entirety, I find it interesting that he calls the ASEAN countries as neighbors. And there is no hyphenation or sort of a caveat in the sense calling it extended neighborhood or any such phraseology. So, you know, the India's optics or imagination of its neighborhood, I think, has made a change and an expansion. Earlier, when we used to think of neighborhood, we generally think of the South Asian neighborhood. But now we see ASEAN as part of the neighborhood. And because of that, we need to integrate more closely with the ASEAN countries. And this integration takes place across the board, right from the areas of connectivity, cultural connectivity, and then, of course, youth connectivity. So you see this particular imagination of ASEAN changing. And of course, that being the central pillar of India's Act East policy. Along with that, also, the Prime Minister has earlier spoken about the Asian century. The world was Western dominated, but that has changed because the world has changed, that it is no longer a unipolar Western dominated world. It's a multipolar world. So in tune with that, I think it's time for Asia to come on its own and not just be a camp follower, but actually setting the global agenda. And in order to do so, it's essential that India and ASEAN work together to get that kind of ballast for Asia's rise because of, you know, when they contribute to each other in terms of their economic heft, in terms of their security capability, in terms of the new economy which is developing. I mean, together that gives enough ballast for the rise of the Asian century. I think that's what the Prime Minister was referring to. And quickly, if you just look at the importance of this region, 60% of the world's GDP comes of it, almost two-thirds of GDP from the ASEAN region, 65% of world trade. And if you look at population-wise, then it's 64% of the population of the world and 40% of the oil passes through this region. So this region is really defining in terms of global geo-economic balance of power as well as the geopolitical heft. So I think it's the bigger picture that the Prime Minister is talking both in terms of ASEAN being part of the neighborhood and India and ASEAN as essential partners for the rise of the Asian century.
In a special briefing, Secretary East Jaideep Mazumdar also talked about peace, stability and security of the countries, as the PM has discussed.
Leaders exchanged views on regional and international matters that affect peace, stability and prosperity in the Indo-Pacific region and beyond. And Prime Minister underlined the severe impact of these conflicts on countries of the Global South and also highlighted that path of dialogue and diplomacy based on a humanitarian approach is the only way forward, and that he reiterated that there was no solution that can be found on the battlefield.
Mr. Wadhwa, we also see that the Prime Minister calling the ASEAN nations as neighbors and partners in the Global South, he said that we are peace-loving nations and respect each other's national integrity and sovereignty and are committed to the bright future of the youth of the region. He also highlighted the Indo-Pacific Oceans Initiative in 2019 and said that last year maritime exercises were started for regional security and stability. Do you feel that the reference somewhere is to the unsaid presence of China? Because we have seen the aggressive and the overly ambitious overtures of China in the region.
Yes, of course, because the Prime Minister, when he speaks about a free and open Indo-Pacific, and also the adherence to the UNCLOS treaty in the conduct of relations in this region, he's obviously referring to the aggressive policies of China. And in recent times, we've seen a number of incidents which have involved China, which have actually affected the peace, security and stability in the South China Sea. And this is what he referred to and said that is in the, that maintaining peace and security and stability in the South China Sea is in the interest of the entire Indo-Pacific region. And therefore, he backed the rules-based Indo-Pacific region and talked about ensuring the freedom of navigation in particular. Also, he talked about solutions to problems not coming from the battlefield and the necessity to respect sovereignty, territorial integrity of countries. Also, maritime activities, when he talked about them, he said they should be conducted under UNCLOS, and therefore it is necessary to ensure freedom of navigation and airspace. So all these obviously are remarks which are directed at the actions of China, and we have to face it that today the region and the countries in the region are also under a lot of pressure from the Chinese action.
We also see that the Prime Minister, when he was addressing the 19th East Asia Summit, the Prime Minister said that the conflicts going on in different parts of the world are having the most negative impact on the countries of the global south. And he said, I come from the land of Buddha and I have repeatedly said that this is not the era of war. Solutions to problems cannot come from the battlefield. And he said that it is necessary to respect sovereignty, territorial integrity and international laws. Keeping a humanitarian approach, dialogue and diplomacy will have to be given priority. Mr. Aneja, when the Prime Minister, one, he's referring to the conflicts, and we have seen these conflicts are kind of dragging on instead of showing any signs of winding down, whether it is the Russia-Ukraine conflict or what we are seeing in the West Asia today. And we also see the Prime Minister refer and talk about the Global South. And this is something that India has been talking for a while now. One, do you feel that India today is truly representing, emerging as the voice of the Global South? And if that is the case, how does India navigate the world when these two conflicts are raging on?
Simran, voice of the Global South, I think that was formally sort of announced or articulated during the 1923 G20 summit itself, that when India took the initiative of getting 56 members, if I'm not wrong, of the African Union as part of the G20 process. And also during the address to the G20, the Prime Minister had also said that India would be that bridge between the North and the South and the East and the West. So I think that formulation was already there, formally articulated in November. But the follow-up, I think, is interesting because I think India's role as a peacemaker on a global stage has come out quite clearly now with the Prime Minister's visit. When you talk of the Ukraine-Russia conflict, the Prime Minister's visit first to Moscow, where he met Russian President Vladimir Putin, and soon after went to Ukraine to meet President Zelensky, which was clearly a peacemaking mission. And India very clearly said that would be a partner in whatever way it can be to resolve these problems. And if you recall the Prime Minister's own speech to the diaspora during his visit to the United States very recently, where he again said that if there's any global problem, whether it is of peace and security, whether it is innovation, and he listed about five areas, India would have to be a part of it. So I think we have elevated ourselves on the global stage. And once again, we see this happening in the East Asia Summit this morning itself, when Prime Minister talks about this is not an era of war and the need for dialogue and India's readiness to be in any way play a helpful role in sort of addressing these conflicts. I think apart from Ukraine and West Asia, Simran, which you mentioned, I think he also added Myanmar to the list today when he talked about that India backs the ASEAN's 5-point consensus on resolving the conflict in Myanmar. I think there's a reason why it's become so much more important. That's Myanmar, specifically in the Indian context. What Anil was talking about was the Northeast connectivity. Now, that is going through Myanmar. And if there is conflict in Myanmar, it hurts India. The entire trilateral highway project is through Myanmar. And of course, we also see a very negative development taking place in Bangladesh, where a regime change has taken place. And that further reinforces the importance of Myanmar. So I think that becomes another geography or another country where India is very keen on peace and security. So I think we are now very clearly, and this has come repeatedly, now ready to play the role, whether it's mediation, whether it is good offices, whether it's facilitation, to play a role in resolving global international conflicts.
Taking the Myanmar thing forward, Ambassador Wadhwa, we see that the Prime Minister said that we support the ASEAN approach to the situation in Myanmar. We also support the 5-point consensus. At the same time, we believe that it is important to maintain humanitarian assistance. He also said that we believe that for this, Myanmar should be engaged, not isolated. My question then is that we've also seen that Myanmar is a very hot topic when it comes on the international stage because the Western nations do not want to engage with Myanmar. So how do you see India being able to manage this? Because we have excellent relations with the West today, but there seems to be a sharp divergence when it comes to Myanmar.
There is a difference in approach as far as India is concerned and as far as the Western countries are concerned or the United States is concerned to what is happening in Myanmar and how to resolve that issue. First of all, India backs the 5-point consensus of the ASEAN because it believes that ASEAN is the best forum to find a solution to the issue of Myanmar and to bring the parties together in Myanmar. Second, in terms of the consultations that India and Thailand have been having in terms of being close neighbors of Myanmar and therefore being affected directly by what happens in Myanmar, Thais have proposed that the humanitarian corridor should be kept open for assistance to the impacted communities in Myanmar, which is the civil people who are living in the countryside, for instance, who have livelihood has been hit. And India is supportive of that approach because it is not the people of Myanmar who are responsible for what is happening. It's the rebel groups and the army, after all. And thirdly, it has an approach of engagement, unlike the West and the United States, where they oppose the military junta, but they don't propose any solution to the problem. And if you don't propose a solution, then obviously you will come to a situation where there is ultimately chaos and dismemberment in a very important neighbor of India. So our approach is therefore on engagement. And in fact, next month, we are also going to have a conclave of the military leadership and also the rebel group separately here in New Delhi on track two basis so that we can come to some kind of an understanding on how and what is required to be done in the current circumstances. So India is trying its best to work with all like-minded countries who do not want to isolate Myanmar, but to actually engage Myanmar to find a solution.
In a special briefing, Secretary East in the MEA went on to discuss the Prime Minister's announcement of the 10-point program, the special plan to strengthen connectivity and resilience with ASEAN, as the PM has discussed.
Prime Minister announced a 10-point special plan to strengthen connectivity and resilience with ASEAN. These involve a wide variety of initiatives that India is taking with ASEAN. They include, for example, celebrating next year as the ASEAN-India Year of Tourism. To mark this decade of Act East policy, several people-to-people and people-centric initiatives were announced. Another important initiative is the ASEAN-India Women Scientists Conclave. We will also have the number of scholarships from Nalanda University will be nearly doubled. We will also expedite our discussions on the review of the ASEAN-India Free Trade in Goods Agreement by 2025. We will also contribute $5 million towards disaster resilience and the National Disaster Management Authority and the ASEAN Coordinating Center for Humanitarian Assistance have working relationship and an MOU, and they will work together on this. In the field of health, we will institute a new health minister's track and also a cooperative framework for ASEAN countries to tap India's national cancer grid, Vishwam. In digital and cyber resilience, we propose a regular mechanism for ASEAN-India cyber dialogue, and its first meeting is scheduled next week in Singapore. And the ASEAN-India Fund for the Digital Future has also been institutionalized and operationalized. We will also have a workshop on green hydrogen with ASEAN and towards climate resilience. Prime Minister invited ASEAN leaders to join the campaign to plant a tree for Mother. ek der ma ke naam.
Mr. Aneja, we've talked about the relationship between India, ASEAN, the partnership, but what are the areas in which you think maybe India and also the ASEAN nations need to focus more, need to maybe put in more work so that this partnership can be strengthened in the coming years?
Well, Simran, the first one which comes to my mind is this re-look on the revision of the India-ASEAN free trade area. And that's obviously not worked according to India's interests. And now there is a new deadline to sort of reboot the whole process. But the interesting part is, since the ASEAN also thinks that its relationship with India is of vital importance, there's a very tight timeline to it. And by 2025, that's a timeline fixed for a revised free trade area agreement. And there are, I think, 8 working groups, if I'm not mistaken, which are sort of working on it right now. So that's one area we need to work on. Then the Prime Minister himself identified a number of areas. You see, there is so far, let's say, take the health track. If I recall, there is a collaboration between India and ASEAN on vaccine development. But I think that needs to be taken and expanded much more. And I think that area has a lot of potential. India, of course, after COVID, came into prominence as the pharmacy of the world. So in terms of pharmaceuticals, that's one area. And I think even alternate medicine systems, Simran, I think what we have done over here, we talk about the DPI, this digital infrastructure, but that's in the digital domain. But on the health side, I think Ayush has been a tremendous success out here in terms of alternate medicine system. And I think that model also, I think, is an exportable commodity. So health, I think, can be expanded much, much more than what it is now. And of course, there is cybersecurity issues, because that's one area, if you're going to expand your relationship, that's one area which needs to be exponentially expanded, because without secure communication, it's not going to work out. Connectivity is in the pipeline, but again, that is one area which needs to be focused. I think this youth interaction is a new initiative in terms of offering fellowships, scholarships for students in ASEAN for the Nalanda University. That's one gap. And I look at it in the geocultural domain. That needs to be accelerated. It is already happening. It's not taking place. India was one country which was involved in the restoration of the Angkor Wat temple in Cambodia a long time. And I think there is a MOU signed today also on Wat Pho temple, which India would be restoring. So that geocultural plane is already in play. But with Nalanda coming into the picture, I think that's also going to reinforce that track. So that's one area, again, which is getting plugged. And then we have the new economy coming, in terms of green hydrogen, renewable energy. Those are new areas which have to be given more prominence. So several areas, but since the relationship is expanded big time, tourism, of course, is one more, the Buddhist circuit, and we can go beyond that. Several areas, Simran, because the intent is there, as I said in the beginning, that it is a neighborhood now, and it is a centerpiece of our ACTEAC's policy, and also the centerpiece of the Quad, if I'm not mistaken, that was the Prime Minister's reference in his speech today. So given the importance of this region, I think there's much more work to be done. But what is interesting is that a lot of it has already got identified, and some of it has already got institutionalized. So now we need to go full steam ahead and fully leverage the potential of this relationship.
Ambassador Wadhwa, Mr. Aneja has given us a good number of points as to where the strengthening is needed. And I was looking at the Prime Minister's 10 suggestions which he has proposed, which will further deepen India's friendship with ASEAN. And the Prime Minister has also mentioned the review of the ASEAN-India trade in goods agreement by 2025, something. The first two points that the Prime Minister has made, the first he has said is the celebrating the year 2025 as ASEAN-India Year of Tourism, for which India would make available $5 million towards joint activities. And the second point the PM has made is that to celebrate a decade of ACT East policy through several people-centric activities, including youth summits, startup festival, hackathon, music festival, ASEAN-India network of think tanks, and Delhi dialogue. Do you feel that tourism is also an underexplored area or a sector when it comes to the relationship between India and the ASEAN nations? And also, along with tourism, the point of the soft culture, because as Mr. Aneja had also said, the Buddhist circuit, and we have this also the old historical ties, whether it is the Ramayana or the Mahabharata.
You're absolutely right. Tourism is a very important area to be concentrated upon. And in this context, celebrating the 2025 as the ASEAN-India Year of Tourism for which India is making available $5 million towards joint activities is extremely important. Now, why is it important? Because, you know, as far as India is concerned, a lot of Indian tourists already visit ASEAN, but, you know, vice versa, if you see the ASEAN tourists who visit India, that number is comparatively low. There are two reasons for this. One is that India has direct connectivity with 7 of the ASEAN states, whereas 3 of them don't have direct connectivity. Most of the ASEAN states have their citizens who would like to come to India for Buddhist tourism. And they would like to visit places of interest to them as far as Buddhism is concerned. India has to develop its Buddhist circuit, has been talking about it for a very, very long time, but has not been able to do so. Now, putting aside this $5 million towards tourism will also mean that India will use some part of these funds in collaboration with ASEAN institutions, in collaboration with ASEAN tourism boards, to develop some of these places of interest to the ASEAN tourists, which will then lead to much more tourism to these places and also lead to connectivity. If both of these conditions are met, then that will have a spiraling effect on our business and investments.
Mr. Aneja, another interesting point that I wanted to discuss further was the Prime Minister. He also commented and he said that there are deep similarities between India's Indo-Pacific Oceans Initiative and the ASEAN outlook on Indo-Pacific. And he also said that ASEAN is also at the center of India's Indo-Pacific vision and the Quad cooperation. Do you feel that this also sums up the future of India's Act East policy? And also briefly, how would you sum up this visit?
Simran, when you talk about India's approach to the Indo-Pacific, I think the doctrine here is not exactly what some other countries have. Here it is SAGAR, essentially, which is security and growth for all in the region, which essentially means that we have concerns about China, but, you know, we really mean inclusivity. I think that is one similarity which India has in its Indo-Pacific approach with the ASEAN. We recognize the problem, but the way to address it is not in a militaristic or a confrontational way, but in a very principled way, in a very solid way, but yet at the same time with an opening for dialogue and diplomacy. Regarding summing up the visit, I think it's a great visit because we have put forward an agenda for the future. And we have recognized ASEAN as a clear-cut neighbor, which is the central pillar in a way of our foreign policy. I mean, the Act East policy has taken a major elevation and has opened new vistas for partnership. And I think it's not only incremental, but it's a reinforcement of India's willingness to engage with ASEAN in a much more productive way. And if you recall, this has been happening, Simran. You know, you had the visits which have taken place after the third term of the Modi administration began. You had the visit of the Prime Minister of Vietnam. You had Anwar Ibrahim coming over here, Prime Minister visiting Singapore and Brunei. So I think this focus on the ASEAN has now sort of got summed up in terms of the participation of the Prime Minister, both in the ASEAN-India summit and in the East Asia summit.
And in the coming days, we will continue our discussions on the India-ASEAN partnership and the many facets that make this a great relationship. With these comments, we bring today's discussion to an end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on significance of Prime Minister's visit to Laos and India's Act East policy. The participants were Anil Vadhva, former ambassador, and Atul Aneja, strategic analyst. The moderator was Simran Sodhi, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.